Have you ever looked at something rusting in a desert and thought that could fly again? I'm Taildragger, and this is the Hangar on Radio Hangar. Pull up a chair because today we're talking about one of the most stubborn, beautiful, borderline crazy restoration projects in warbird history. The story of a B-29 superfortress named Doc. Now let me set the scene for you. It's 1987. A guy by the name of Tony Mazzolini, retired from the airline world, is poking around the edge of China Lake Naval Weapons Station out in the Mojave Desert in California. The Navy had been using old airframes out there for target practice and weapons testing for decades, and sitting on the hardpan baking in that relentless high desert sun is a B-29. She's been out there since the late 1950s. 30 years of wind, sand, and ultraviolet punishment. Her skin is pocked, her tires are flat, her engines are seized. Most people would look at that hulk and see scrap aluminum. Tony Mazzolini looked at her and saw an airplane. Today's show is brought to you by AviationSoul.com. Aviation challenge coins for every milestone in flight. First solo, private pilot, instrument rating, all the way up. If you've earned it, they've got a coin for it. Every coin tells a story. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. Now here's where it gets interesting. This particular B-29, serial number 446175, had been built at the Boeing plant in Wichita, Kansas in 1944. She was one of the very last production superfortresses to roll off the line before the war ended. She never saw combat. Instead, she served in various stateside roles, got transferred around, and eventually wound up at China Lake, where the Navy used her as a ground target for radar tracking exercises. They didn't shoot her, they just pointed things at her. But nobody bothered to keep her up, and the desert did what the desert does. Mazzolini had a vision. He wanted to get this airplane back to Wichita, back to the city where she was born, and restore her to flying condition. Sounds simple when you say it fast. Took him more than a decade just to get the airplane released from the Navy and transported. Think about that, before a single wrench was turned on the restoration, years went by just cutting through red tape, arranging logistics, and convincing people this was not a fool's errand. The airframe finally arrived in Wichita in the year 2000. And when I say arrived, I mean she came in pieces. The wings were detached, the engines were gone, the fuselage was a shell. They set her up in a hangar and a group of volunteers, many of them retired Boeing workers who had actually built B-29s decades earlier, started the long, painstaking work of bringing her back. Let me tell you about the B-29 for a minute, because you have to understand what kind of machine we're talking about to appreciate what these folks were up against. The Superfortress was the most complex, most expensive weapons system of World War II. More money was spent developing the B-29 than was spent on the Manhattan Project. That is not an exaggeration. Boeing designed an airplane with a pressurized cabin, remote-controlled gun turrets operated by analog computers, engines that were notorious for overheating, and a wingspan of just over 141 feet. Each of those four Wright R3350 engines put out 2,200 horsepower and had 18 cylinders arranged in two rows. They were magnificent and temperamental machines that caught fire with alarming regularity during the war. So restoring one of these things is not like rebuilding a Stearman in your garage. You're dealing with miles of wiring, hydraulic systems that nobody has made parts for in 60 years. Pressurization systems, turret mechanisms, and four of the most complicated radial engines ever mass-produced. The Doc Restoration Team, which eventually became a formal nonprofit called Doc's Friends, tackled the project mostly with volunteer labor. We're talking retired machinists, sheet metal workers, engineers, and just regular aviation enthusiasts who showed up on weekends and gave their time for free. At the peak, they had 100 or more volunteers cycling through that hangar. Some of them had worked on the B-29 production line during the war. They were in their 70s, their 80s, and they were crawling around inside that fuselage with rivet guns like it was 1944 all over again. The skinwork alone was staggering. Thousands of aluminum panels had to be inspected, and most of them had to be replaced. The desert hadn't been kind. Corrosion had eaten through rivet lines, sand had pitted surfaces beyond repair. Every panel that went on had to be formed, fitted, and riveted by hand, matching the original Boeing specifications from wartime engineering drawings. And finding those drawings, that was its own adventure. The team spent years tracking down original Boeing technical documents, some from the Smithsonian archives, some from private collectors, some from filing cabinets in old Boeing storage buildings that nobody had opened in decades. The engines were a project unto themselves. Wright R3350. Duplex cyclones are not something you can order from a catalog. The team sourced engines from various military surplus channels, had them torn down and rebuilt by specialists who knew radial engine work. Each engine had to be meticulously overhauled. New cylinders, new bearings, new magnetos, new everything that wears or corrodes. And then you've got to hang them on the wing, plumb the oil lines, the fuel lines, the hydraulics for the cowl flaps, run the wiring for the ignition and the instruments. Four times over. One of the things that really gets me about this project is the patience. There were years when it looked like the whole thing might stall out. Funding dried up, volunteers aged out, parts couldn't be found. There was a stretch in the mid-2000s when progress slowed to almost nothing and people started to wonder if Doc would ever fly again. But the core group never quit. They kept showing up. They kept turning wrenches, and slowly, so slowly you could barely see it happening week to week, the airplane started to look like an airplane again. By 2015, Doc was structurally complete. She had her wings, her engines, her tail surfaces, her landing gear. The interior was being finished. The instrument panel was being populated with the right gauges, and on July 17, 2016, Doc flew for the first time in more than 60 years. I want you to picture that moment. A Wichita summer morning. A crowd of volunteers, some of them who'd been working on this airplane for 10, 15 years, some of them who'd built B-29s during the war and were now in their 90s. And this big, silver, beautiful Superfortress taxis out, lines up on the runway, and those four right radials come up to full power. The sound of a B-29 at full takeoff power is something that vibrates through your chest cavity. It's not just loud, it's deep, it's layered. Each engine has its own voice, and when they're all howling together, it's a chord that you feel in your bones. She broke ground, and she climbed. And she flew a series of gentle circuits over Wichita. And the people on the ground were weeping. I'm not being dramatic. Grown men and women who had given years of their lives to this project, standing on a ramp with tears running down their faces, watching an airplane they had willed back into existence making lazy turns against a Kansas sky. Now Doc is one of only two flying B-29s in the world. The other is Fifi, operated by the Commemorative Air Force out of Dallas. For years, Fifi was the only one. She carried the entire weight of keeping the B-29 alive in the public imagination. Having Doc join her means the type has a little more security. If one airplane goes down for maintenance, the other can still fly the airshow circuit, still give rides, still let people hear those engines, and understand what the crews of the 20th Air Force experienced over the Pacific. Doc is now based at her own facility in Wichita, a purpose-built hangar right on Eisenhower National Airport, formerly McConnell Air Force Base, which has its own B-29 history. The hangar doubles as an education center and museum. Visitors can walk right up to the airplane, look up into the bomb bay, see the gun turrets, touch the aluminum skin that volunteers shaped with their own hands. What I love about this story is that it's not really about an airplane. I mean, it is. She's a magnificent machine. But the real story is about the people. The retired Boeing workers who came back to practice a craft they hadn't used in decades. The young volunteers who learned sheet metal work from old-timers who had done it during a world war. The donors who wrote checks because they believed. The machinists who fabricated parts that haven't been manufactured since Truman was president. It took a village, and then some. And there's something about the B-29 specifically that makes this matter. This was the airplane that ended the war. This was the airplane that flew the Berlin airlift. This was the airplane that ushered in the age of strategic air power. And she was nearly gone. If Tony Mussolini hadn't walked out into that desert in 87 and seen something beyond a pile of corroded aluminum, there would be one flying superfortress in the world instead of two, and the margin between remembering and forgetting would be that much thinner. The restoration drew from Boeing's original Wichita engineering archives and from the documentation held by the National Air and Space Museum. If you want to see Doc in person, her schedule is posted on b29doc.com. She tours the airshow circuit every summer, and those ride flights sell out fast. This is Tail Dragger on the hangar. Go see her if you get the chance. Some airplanes you read about. This one, you need to hear.